Hello.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, we're recording as we speak.
Very well.
Do it live.
Yeah, sort of. This is the live in studio version of. I don't even know what we call this. I mean, DB's not here. Todd's not here. Chad's not here.
Is this Red Roof Radio?
Sure.
Red Roof Radio is kind of nice. We could do that. Let's do that. Let's call it Red Roof Radio.
That's RRR.
Right, it's a little weird because it feels like Red Roof Friend. But we'll just pretend that's not the case. So this is how we start up Red Roof Radio. We talk about what beer we're sampling this evening. I mentioned to Matt that I have a lot of leftover Blue Moon in cans, which is, of course, serviceable.
Classy.
So that's what I'm doing. Matt, you've opened up your aged barley wine. Am I understanding this correctly?
Yeah, I have a homebrew aged barley wine. It's just over a year in the bottle, and it's serving itself just fine right now.
It's serving itself. That's how old it is.
That is how old it is.
It's turned a little
sour on me.
Uh-oh. Well, that's okay. That's called the open fermentation process, right?
Something like that.
Nathaniel, are you what are you partaking in?
I just finished a Samuel Adams summer ale.
Summer ale, because in Evanston, where Nathaniel and I both reside, it is very clearly summer. I know Matt, you're not far away. In fact, holy cow, this is an entire podcast based in the Chicago area.
It is. Ooh.
That's kind of a shock. We've all experienced hail tonight, I assume.
A little bit.
Yes.
It's so
unexpected.
It was. So I'm going to start this mini podcast out by talking a little bit about my 1M, which I drove today. It'll be very short, don't worry, but I drove it today knowing that I was going to be wet. And because it was getting dirty and I knew I had to wash it anyway, so this moment, this great, great moment where it's wet out and it's a rear-wheel drive car with a lot of power and balance and you turn off the traction control and you just have an amazing time. And it's interesting, like having owned a lot of minis, you can have the same kind of fun in a mini as well. A lot of fun, in fact, especially with the GP or some of the R56 cars, because they have the certain kind of cars with certain suspension, specifically the coupe, has such a tendency to do lift off throttle oversteer that you can have a ton of fun with it. And when you limit traction, and Matt, I think you'll agree with me because of your car.
Yeah.
When you limit traction, you have so much more fun. And then it hit me, and I've thought about this before. Everything that's happening right now with automotive, like every car, tires, you know, everything is all about gaining more traction. When in reality, what we want as enthusiasts is less traction.
Yeah, absolutely.
A little dynamic traction, maybe?
Something like that.
A little moody traction?
I want to, but it's not defeating traction control. It's actually allowing me to have, I guess, wider slip angles. Is that possible? I mean,
I can appreciate that.
The E28
Bakelite tires, you know, it's a master of it's, you know, slip angle at 5 miles an hour. I mean,
well,
you
that's
15
that's
mile
true.
An hour drift all day
so
long.
We have to take a step back, and again, we're going to talk about minis in a second, but this is this is fresh in my mind. Matt, you own a 5 series BMW from the 80s, which is called an E28.
Yes.
That, I used to own that car as well, and mm-hmm. I to this day have never had a car that you could just stab and it, like you said, 5 miles an hour, flick your wrist a tiny bit, and just be in a drift basically for the entire block.
Yeah, pretty much.
but you absolutely require moisture on the road.
Yes, and it's there is no quick getaway.
True.
It just does not happen.
But
everything happens in a very deliberate fashion with that car, which is great. I mean, it's a wonderful, entertaining, device, and you know, you know what it's going to do before it does it. It's just it's a wonderful thing, and I think with watch me do this now with minis, it really depends on the car, and I have to always go back to that original GP. Having really, I think, some of the best liftoff oversteer of any mini. And then, of course, with the change in weight distribution with the R56, now you got, with almost the stock R56, some of that same feel, meaning that I go deep into a corner hard and then midway lift off and the tail will come out and want to slide out, meaning oversteer. That is oversteer. Understeer is when your car plows through the corner. And it's once you understand how to control it, and on a front-wheel drive car like the Mini, it's very easy to control. It's just fantastic. You have so much fun. And to me, the pinnacle was driving the coupe on the track in Austria and lap after lap getting to the point where I'd push hard and lift off and drift gently out into the rumble strips. And it's, you know, people have talked about the coupe being this sort of unruly thing, and there's been a lot of magazine articles talking about how it just doesn't, you know, just doesn't, it sort of feels at odds with a Mini character. And I actually think that it was all done on purpose. They did a great job. I think it's just frankly been a little bit misunderstood by some reviewers.
Yeah, I think that they just haven't taken the time to appreciate where Mini was coming from. And you know, at the press launch for the coupe, they were, you know, in how they presented it, they were very intentional about, you know, this is a performance-minded car like we've never built, and it's designed to be that little bit tail-happy, and you know that it is not supposed to be tame and, you know, necessarily predictable, but is just supposed to be a lot more alive and a lot more fun and very much its own thing. And that they were, in a way, only able to do that because it didn't have back seats.
So let's take a step back for a second, because Matt's on the show tonight. Matt, mm-hmm. you're on the show once every... isn't there like a really big moon on Saturday? Can we just say it's like every time there's a big moon?
Yeah, you could put it that way, something okay. like that. I think the last time I was on it was January 2011,
which also had a big moon. If yeah, I remember right. Yeah,
very an enormous moon.
Yeah, huge moon. So the big moon is back. So we asked Matt to be on the show tonight, and we have and Todd is at the Dragon, I believe.
He is mm-hmm. good for him.
And DB is currently.
I think he's
putting out forest fires or setting them.
I thought he was at Square Dancing lessons.
Oh, yes. That's one of the two.
Something like that. So maybe it's Square Dance Forest Fire Fighting.
I don't even know.
Where they make formations possible. And they call out instructions to. Yeah.
There's a joke about a certain region in the United States. I don't even know what that region is, but it's there somehow. Anyway.
Regional humor.
My point is that, you know, you're here. Nathaniel, you're here.
I am here.
Now, mm-hmm. you guys, we've all owned R53s in
yes.
the past.
Some of us still do.
Yes. Matt has had a couple. I've had a couple. Nathaniel, you are still on your first.
The original.
Which is...
and still the best.
Which is your first Mini. We'll just say that because I'm not ready to say that yet.
My one and only Mini.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about this because I think... we have a lot of different opinions on this show. And, oh, look at this. Todd Pearson just came online. We have a lot of different opinions on this show. And I'm just curious to have this conversation with you guys, knowing what we have in front of us. We have the next Mini coming up in about 18 months or so. And the R56 is, you know, granted, there's going to be lots of variations floating around for a while, but it's kind of getting to the point where it's almost running its course. We're going to see the GP in about a week or so. Is the R53, even throughout, I'll just throw this out to you guys, even after 6-7 years of the R56 and all these different iterations, the fact that R56 is faster, it's better at everything in a way that's almost tangible. It's hard to disagree with that, but I'm mm-hmm. I'm interested to hear your opinion. Is the R53 still the Mini for the enthusiast, the hardcore enthusiast?
That's a good question. I mean, the, you know, without being able to, I guess, put a better definition on, you know, who that quintessential enthusiast is, I mean, I can only speak for myself, and that the experience that I have consistently every time that I drive one of the R56 base Minis, either as a loaner when my car is getting worked on or at a Mini press event or whatever, I always like that car immensely. It is more comfortable. It is more capable. It
the
is
R53
faster,
is more comfortable.
It handles better. It feels better.
So the R53 is more comfortable? That's one.
No, no, the R 56 is.
Oh, I was gonna. Okay,
I'm saying every time. No, no. Yeah, I'm saying every time. Every time I drive an R 56, I realize how much more comfortable it is than my R 53. I realize how much more capable it is. But yet, whenever I come home and drive my R 53, I remember all the things that I really love about that car. It has charming flaws.
Yeah, so like I was going to say it has character in a way that no modern car has had, I would say, in 20 years, maybe even 30.
Yeah, including the R56. And
sure.
That is what I always come back to, that, you know, no matter what else I'm tempted by, be it Mini or otherwise, that I might, you know, trade my car in on, I really can never quite let go of it, just because I know how special it is. And I know that that car will not come around again, most likely. And so I might, I keep coming back to, well, I might as well hang on to this one because it's mine.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So yeah, I mean, Matt, I'm curious because, I mean, I've got opinions that have been heard in the show before. I'm curious your
I have limited experience with R56s, but every time I've driven one, I've come down to, I come away thinking it's like the first step towards, how do I put this? It's not exactly the Camryification of Mini relative to the R53, but the R53, Nathaniel's right. The R56 is a better car all around. It's faster, it's more comfortable, but it misses the nth degree of feel and the sort of hyperactivity that you receive or that you get coming from the R53. Yeah. And I don't know that that will ever come back again.
I think there's something to it. Takes a little more skill, dare I say, to drive an R53 well.
But let's stop. I don't think it's that much skill.
But just that little bit.
I'd quibble with you there because I think ultimately, if I took, I would hope that I'm not sufficiently ham-fisted that I couldn't get it out of it. But
let me qualify. I think it takes more skill because it's flawed.
But you can't get the car as fast. I think ultimately, car for car, the R56 would ultimately be faster if you talk, you know, over similar tracks, same conditions. But the R53 just feeds more. It's just, it gives more to the driver as far as feedback and kind of demands from you. But ultimately, I think the R56 probably is the better car, but it's not. It's not as much fun.
So let me chime in here and say just a couple quick things, because I don't want to spend the whole show on this, but I think it's an interesting debate, and it's always fun to talk about, and it's fun to hear what commenters think of how stupid we are. The R53, I've owned an R50 and R53, and I've owned an R56, and gosh, I've only had one of those. Yeah. The R53 is a more rewarding car in a lot of respects for me. Getting into it and driving it, it is not as enjoyable immediately. It's really interesting because I sort of cut my teeth on these cars, and then the R56 came along, and then Matt, I drove your R53 after I sold my R56. It had been a little bit, I had sort of been removed from it, and I had driven a lot of BMWs, and I'd done a lot of press trips, and I got in your car and drove it just a little bit. And I was immediately taken by how mismatched the clutch feel was to the shifting mechanism. Like, I mean, wow! Like, how did anyone sign off on this? It feels really odd. I mean, it's fine. I can deal with it. It's not a problem. But it doesn't feel like, wow, this feels like somebody created this car pretty quickly, which they did. You know, and I'm not trying to trash it, because I mean, you know, my whole point is that. That all that stuff adds up to, it feels like these feel like flaws. They add up to character in that car. And I think it's because, you know, the total package is just so fun. And I get back to this feeling, and I've said it since almost day one with the R50 when I first drove it. And I think it's slightly more true with the first generation Minis. The R53 and the R50 are fun at 9 miles an hour. The R56 is fun at maybe 15. most cars don't get fun until it's 70. An M3, God bless it, doesn't get fun, really fun, until it gets over 100. So, you know, while I think the R56 is a better car, and frankly the car I would prefer to own day to day, the R53 is just such a charming little beast, and it's so much fun, immediately fun. Mm-hmm. And it's not fun for everyone. It's fun for us three, fun for most people. Most people get into it and immediately want the R56, and that's fine. You know what? Here's the secret, and all the commenters can listen to this. They have every right to think that. Their opinion is just as valid as mine or yours or anybody who's listening to this show. So there's no right answer here as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. No. And yeah, I think you've hit at it. And that's really what I meant, you know, how I meant to qualify what I said earlier is that little bit of extra skill is not because the R53 is more capable, but because it's more flawed. Like, you got to really be in tune with that transmission to do it smoothly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the steering is a little twitchy, and, you know, just all of those things come quirky together.
The steering is, it's interesting that the R53, people don't believe me when I say this, but it's lighter than the R56, specifically with a sport button pressed. I mean, it's a lighter, you know, it's quicker, but it's also lighter. It literally feels lighter, but it has more feel because it's not electric steering.
I was going to say the R56 communicates a hell of a lot less.
I wouldn't say a hell of a lot less. I think it does communicate less, but when you drive a modern car, the R53 is outstanding, where the R56 is just really good.
Yeah, well, steering feel in a modern car is a whole nother conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. It absolutely is. I mean, it's, you know, it's unfortunately, things are changing and the definition of feel is changing. And there are people who work at at manufacturers, some of them at Mini and BMW, who would challenge you, Matt, on think feel is.
Oh, he has. He has.
There are people who literally will show you the data on what feel is, the vibrations of what feel is, and show you that it's not really different.
Yeah, so, it's just I know it's just noise, but the R53 has a lot of really fun noise.
Yeah. Oh, no question. And you know what? Mm-hmm. There's no way that that supercharger is outstanding, and it's gone because it's not efficient. We all know that, and there's a lot of better ways to make more power. So I love this conversation, and I think it's one that, if handled correctly, and I think we are today doing that, like, I think it's a fun conversation to have, because nobody should be trashing either car. They're both really great. Both have their problems. Both are outstanding in a lot of different ways. You could love the R53 and hate the R56. That's fine. I think you're stupid to hate either of them, frankly.
Can I hate the R60?
I don't know if you can do that, technically, because I haven't read your review yet.
There's a reason why it hasn't come out yet.
Mm. Well, the R60 is still in development. That's the thing that you should definitely know. And let me say this: Nathaniel's the only one who's driven what the R60 should actually be.
Yeah, the JCW version.
Yeah.
And it is a big difference. I mean, and speaking of steering feel, I would contend that the R60 has terrific steering feel.
I would contend that's something the R60 you pointed out. Has the best steering feel of any Mini sold today. And I just assume it's because of the updated electronics in the rack itself. But without the sport button pressed, I think it's really pretty good. It's certainly slower. I mean, I think that's one key thing here, is that I don't want to confuse the difference between a quick ratio rack versus feel. The R60 should have a slower rack. It's a bigger car. It's a crossover. It doesn't need to be darty. The R53, of course, needed to be darty because that was its character. The R56 the same way. That's one of those things that, to me, I wish many would vary up a little bit more. So with the GP, for instance, I don't know if it will. I doubt it will. But it'd be great if it had a different rack in it, so the ratio is a tiny bit more aggressive.
Mm. So, yeah, the R60 JCW, at least the prototype that we drove in Austria, you know, it definitely has a feel to it that, even as a prototype, like, it felt right for that car. Like, that car finally had the amount of power it needed to have, and then with the suspension tuned in the way that it was, you know, it just felt properly planted, and it finally felt, you know, like I said in the review, it finally felt like a Countryman you could genuinely drive in anger.
So yeah, that's one thing that I mean, and I have to challenge that. I do drive my Countryman in anger sometimes, but
well, sure.
I think if you fix the clutch feel in the Countryman, you go which, like 80% of the way just making that car feel a million times better.
And frankly, it was better in that JCW car. It was not that weird, goofy high engagement point like it is in our long-term loaner.
Right, right.
I struggle to think of how they could make that clutch worse.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, it's so funny because so Matt got in the car and you, of course, you did the stint out to the Detroit Auto Show with Todd. And I told you that you will stall it. I mean, no matter what you do, no matter how many transmissions and manuals you've driven, you will stall this car right now when you get in this car and start it. I'm just giving you a warning. And you looked at me like I was an idiot. You got in, turned it on, stalled it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not a genius. I just know for a fact that almost anybody, unless it's almost a mistake, frankly, unless you go out of your way, you will stall it if you drive it normally.
I did the exact same thing last year, this time last year, at the Dragon in Jill Raymer's Countryman when she offered to let me drive it up and down the Dragon. I stalled it immediately trying to pull out. So it happens to all of us.
It does. So let's move on because I want to talk about a few other things. The Countryman Coupe has reared its happy face on a couple websites. I think notably Autoblog, and we haven't posted the photos because we want to give Autoblog an exclusive ride to them, I suppose, since they paid Brenda Pretty and Company a pretty price. But they are very, very – it's clear that this car is very similar to the Countryman concept, the Countryman Coupe concept that was at Detroit. I'm sorry, the Paceman concept, as it was called back then.
Yes.
It will be called the Countryman Coupe, from what we know.
Yeah, we've got two cars even. It's not just a single test mule, but looked like a pair of them.
Yeah, Coopers, no less. And so here's the interesting thing about this car. A, the rear lights certainly look similar, if not identical, to the ones that were on the concept. And then B, I was personally promised two rear doors by somebody very high up at Mini, as well as one of the single best source for BMW information that's public, Scott 27 or Scott 26 or Air 26 as
Air 26
known on Bimmerfile and Motoring File. They've all said that this car will have dual suicide doors. And while I can't verify it doesn't, they don't look obvious to me looking at, and we only see one side, but I don't see the telltale signs of them.
Right. And, it could be that they're an optional extra, but it seems unlikely given how far back the existing door goes, unless they did two custom doors on it if you ordered the club doors. I don't know. It looks like it's just not going to have them.
It's interesting. Yeah, I just don't see the signs. It's always difficult with the wonderful graphics they put on these cars, but yeah, like you said, Nathaniel, it doesn't seem like it's there unless it's a massive. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, unless it's a huge door, but I just don't see it. Does not look like it to me.
Yeah, I don't see it either. And the one thing I am seeing on this, you pointed out the taillights. I'm a little bit sad about that, not because of any particular, critique of the shape of them in and of themselves, other than they kind of look like Passat taillights. But what's sad about this is this will be the first Mini taillight to actually touch the boot seam.
So that was if you go back to that time period when this concept was released, I mean that was purposeful. They wanted to create a sort of a sleeker. They wanted to create more horizontal lines on this car, and in doing so, they wanted to take that taillight and sort of warp it and make it feel like there's motion there. I don't disagree with you. It's a bit of a departure.
Well, and it's the thing is, it's not even so much a design critique as much as, you know, going back to like Frank Stephenson's original design on the R50, it was a intentional choice to have the clamshell bonnet, even though that was more expensive. And it was an intentional choice to have the island style rear taillights that did make their way into the R56
which all minis still have.
And it's more expensive to do that because it's more difficult sheet metal tooling and so forth.
Well, and I think anytime you basically combine seams, you're saving, and it's not dramatic, folks. I mean, it's not thousands of dollars. I mean, it's a few bucks, maybe 10, something like that. But I mean, your point, Nathaniel, is a good one in that, you know, it does cut across the seam. I think to me the point that a lot of people will see who aren't maybe as steeped in mini lore is just that it doesn't look like a mini taillight.
No, not anymore.
Yeah, it's different. And I'll give you my critique and then I'm going to not talk about this car because I don't like, I need to see it in person again and yada yada yada. I don't want to critique it too much.
Wait, did you just say again?
Well,
Was that a little slip?
No. We saw and Matt saw it too. We saw it as a concept in Detroit.
The basement. Okay.
Yeah, I mean it's the same. I mean, frankly, it's the same car. It's the same thing. I have one in my driveway right now.
I'll be right there.
Right, I'll tweet my address to my followers. No, so you know this car is it's interesting. So it's sloped down in the back. The back is clearly the huge difference here, but what they didn't change and what they didn't change in the concept either, and which didn't bother me in the concept, but kind of does now, is the height of the front of the windshield. And it's strange, but it makes the car look, and I hate to say this because I know other people are going to latch onto it. It looks like it's got a giant forehead.
It really does. Yeah, it's a little browy. Like it seems like this car really should have the sloped windshield off of the coupe.
Or something along those lines. You know what? I think I'll probably be mistaken. I probably will be, but it does look a little like it's just. I don't know if it's ungainly or not. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, it's a little. Gosh, there's that old transport plane from the 50s that had a huge, like, guppy nose on it.
Right, but here's the thing, though. As I look at it from the front, I don't get that at all. It's just a couple angles I get that. Because what happens is the belt line is rising in the back. And when it rises, it sort of takes that away when I look at it from the front. So, you know, it could just be me. It could just be that angle.
Yeah, and I think once you take the camouflage off and you have that full, you know, negative space in the door and you get the full front to back belt line and everything, the proportions will probably make a lot more visual sense.
Yeah, no, that's probably true.
I had the same reaction you did. I was just kind of like, just kind of underwhelmed. Like, this is not as good looking as I hoped it would be. But then I went back and looked at the concept, which is, like you pointed out, exactly the same car, and it looks terrific. So I think once they get all the swirly crap off of it, it'll be good looking again.
No, I don't disagree. So we should move on. I think it's a very timely discussion to have right now. The Dragon. So the Dragon's currently ongoing. All three of us have been to the Dragon different times, and I mean, I think we could all wax poetically about how incredible that place is, and how every mini owner and enthusiast should at some point experience the Dragon. But more importantly, I think we should talk about the fact that it may have claimed a car.
Oh, this week?
That's the rumor. And it tends, there always tends to be an off at the Dragon of some kind during minis on the Dragon. I think that's something that is sort of a rite of passage, if you will. But Matt, sounds like something happened with an R60. Is that true?
That's what I understand. I saw a picture. I forget where it was. I believe it was either off of Twitter or Facebook. But it was a picture of a. It was a Countryman. the Black Countryman, and the, I'm not going to say it was written off, but the front end was fairly well crumpled, and there were emergency personnel on the scene.
Ooh, oh my!
Let's not make light of that. I mean, I hope everybody's okay. Obviously,
absolutely.
That's not something to joke about, but it's just something to note. The Dragon is certainly not a place to push a car if you don't know it very well.
Right, drive within yourself.
Yeah. So, Nathaniel, we had something on Motoring File this week, which garnered some feedback, if you will. It was a rendering created by a former BMW Design Works designer, and it was a rendering that is sort of his take on what the next Mini should be. Now, before we get into this, it's worth noting that this is A, completely unofficial, B, created by a guy who may have left on his own accord, may have not, may have been, you know, let go, may have, who knows? We just don't know. But we do know that he's just sort of creating stuff on the side in his spare time, which leads me to believe that he's not entirely gainfully employed.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, this is one guy's idea of what Mini could be, and
it's worth discussion. It's worth a discussion because of his past. But let me just start this conversation off by saying there is not a single redeeming quality in this car that I like. There's not a single thing that I think is interesting, and this is most important in my mind, lasting.
Mm. Yeah, I look at this car and I see kind of if this was the direction that Mini were to go. Like, this is something that would usher in an era of, you know, Mini just kind of being another car out there on the road rather than being the sort of very unique thing that it is. And I'm speaking strictly from a design standpoint. Yeah. And, you know, there's that timelessness even in the current generation of cars that obviously started with the original and started with the R53. But in the back of my mind, from a design standpoint, the one thing that I have always feared for the future of Mini is wondering at what point will they just go down a what would seem like a more aggressive or a more revolutionary line of thinking that will in actuality lead them into something that is still maybe great looking but is no longer sort of timeless. You know, like, I think about I saw a Ford Fiesta four-door. And at least in my opinion, that's a great looking car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's not a uniquely great looking car.
I totally agree.
Yeah. And so I fear someday that Mini may go down that line. Hopefully it's not anytime soon. But I mean, for me, the epitome of it is every once in a while I see, you know, in the RSS feed we follow with Motoring File and whatnot, something new from MG. And, you know, MG obviously is owned by a Chinese company now, but I mean, even MGs from a decade ago, you know, and I'll see pictures of those cars and I'll look at my dad's 1969 MG, and those two cars could not have less in common from a design standpoint. And I look at a concept like this and hear, you know, if this was the next Mini, you know, that's the branch in the road where it just starts going down a path where it just no longer has anything to do.
Well, that's my fear. I mean, this car is okay. So let me not say this car, the next Mini, the F56, will be based on a shared platform with BMW. And as much as I've been told to my face by BMW designers, by the head of BMW design, as well as the head of Mini design, that they will not accept a Mini, you know, looking like a BMW. They will keep it a Mini. I still get nervous about it. I mean, I've literally been, you know, I've been reassured by the people creating these cars and overseeing them that it will retain its unique character. Yet I'm still concerned that what we will end up with is something that we see here in front of us in this story. And I don't know if it's, I assume it won't be true, but this, you know, to me, I look at this thing and I see, you're right, exactly right. This is an attractive, interesting car. This is not a successful Mini. It's not timeless. It may be, you know, successful for a few years, but it's not something that to me feels like it's lasting.
Yeah, this is a design path towards planned obsolescence.
Yeah. I do not disagree. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I hadn't seen it until you started talking about it, and I just looked at it, and not being a designer, I'm not going to pursue that discussion, but I will just say it's ugly.
Well, you have eyes.
I do have eyes.
Well, yeah, it's not like either Gabe or I design cars for a living.
Yeah, I think it's somewhat clear if you look at some of the reviewers, commenters. I think some of them had the same thought. You know, there's certainly some angles that you look at it and like, oh, the front end looks better. It looks like an Aston Martin, you know, and there's some things that were done that weren't terrible and interesting, mm-hmm. As a whole, not super thrilled by it.
I see the Rocket Man style, halos on the headlights. Those are kind of interesting.
Well, and we'll get those with the F-56.
Yeah, and I think that the taillights are kind of interesting because they retain that, that kind of mini shape, but they do it in a more interesting way. Otherwise, the rest of it is, it would be a great car for 3 years, and then they would have to fiddle with it a little more and put a couple more cut lines on it and make it a little bit more aggressive, and then within 10 years it would be a Fiesta, it would be a Veloster, it would just be trying so damn
so
hard.
I was behind a Veloster today and I just kept on thinking, what designer creates this thing and doesn't think it's overwrought? It's such a—
oh, that is the best word to describe that car.
Wasn't that the intent of that car?
I think it was.
And you know what the intent of Pontiac was in the 90s? Overwrought.
Same thing. Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, truthfully, that is an aesthetic choice. I don't care what market you're going after. That's a choice that always fails.
I was gonna say, what's Hyundai's position in the market? But
right. Yeah, they're kind of a scrappy little brand at this point, and they're doing some interesting things, and the Veloster is kind of an interesting car, but yeah, it is. I do think intentionally, but it's definitely overwrought. It is just trying so hard, and I think the Juke is equally guilty of that. Just trying way too hard.
Yeah, and until you put a GTR in it. Did you see that today?
Yeah, the Jukar.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
They're actually making it. That's
$600,000 that car will cost.
Unbelievable. I love that. This is how you get a limited edition car built. You basically ship it to Dubai. Do a series of publicity stunts and record a series of videos. And then it's just randomly get a handful of orders and say, okay, so if we're going to sell five of these, how much should we? Okay, 600 grand. Who wants it? All five of you? All right, we're doing it.
So how do you not love Nissan just for having done that, though?
Well, here's the interesting thing about that. It was not Nissan. It was Nissan UK. So they did it, and Nissan UK did this, unbeknownst to Nissan Japan. In fact, when Nissan Japan got word of it, they were pissed, because just not but a few weeks after the R was shown, they were releasing their Nismo, or whatever it's called, the sort of the Juke Nismo collection, which was just a series of tack on shit. Sorry, excuse the word.
You bleep it later.
Yeah, and like a modest, modest horsepower gain. So, I mean, they were totally upstaged by a random small division in the UK. So it's just fascinating to me that, I mean, clearly Nissan UK has made a go of this thing and obviously got quite a bit of support.
You guys have seen that video, right, of it racing the Sheik's car collection?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
I saw it, and I mean, it just flogs them,
yeah.
Like just takes them to town, and to such an extent that I really couldn't help but wonder, like, did they just have teenagers off the street driving the other cars? Were they? It almost seemed like it was beating them a little too handily. It's like, really, this Jugar is that much faster than a Lamborghini? Like, it just seemed a little bit staged.
Can we just segue into Chris Harris's review of the good comparison of the CLK Black M3? And
I love how this is a mini show, but it's not tonight.
Well, not anymore. But I mean, clearly the man owns the Porsche, right?
I mean, so
you look at the way he's driving them. One is obviously being pushed to
thrashed.
11. The other two are sitting at like 7.5.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It is. I agree. It's pretty funny. And he comes away. He talks about the GTS, the M3 GTS is just. I mean, I think he has a little bit more respect for it than he did originally. But of course, he's going to like the Porsche. He loves the Porsche. He owns it. Mm-hmm. Let's move on really quickly here and talk a little bit about what's on Motoring File. Would you guys pay $65,000 for an unrestored Mini, the oldest one in existence? It's basically still rusting.
If I were made of money, maybe.
I don't think I'd even have the attention span to do it, even if I was made for money.
It's a museum piece, right? I mean, there's...
A great one. I mean, even... I don't get it, because it's not even a Mini. It's not even a Cooper.
It's just a straight up Mini. I mean, they didn't have Coopers back then. It was just their
exactly
own Minis.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know. Like, is it a case of misplaced nostalgia? Like, what is it that would draw someone to this car? It's certainly not the shape that it's in. That has a certain amount of charm, but I'd say it has, $800 worth of charm. I don't care what number it is.
So let's back up for just a second. And Nathaniel, I don't think we didn't have a show last week, so nobody's talked about this. So I had a Countryman automatic for a little while, and I kind of didn't mind it. I mean, of course, the clutch and the manual didn't help. But we recently got some information about Mini's next generation cars and the fact that they are looking at either a 8-speed or 9-speed automatic. Mm-hmm. That, of course, would be replacing the 6-speed automatic currently in the Mini. And my money is on a 9-speed torque converting automatic, which is, and don't let that fool you, it shifts as fast as a DCT, but is actually more efficient and is better at everyday drivability. My question is, would you guys ever consider a 9-speed auto with proper paddles that shifted, that blipped the throttle, that did everything you want, that was more efficient than a manual and faster?
I think it would depend on the car.
In a Mini.
I know that, but I mean, it would depend on the Mini. I think that if I'm in a Roadster versus a Countryman Coupe, for example, that I might want different things out of that car, or there'd be different expectations on how often my wife is driving. And then she can drive stick, but doesn't necessarily want to all of the time. I think that there are sort of those extenuating factors. But I mean, good grief, 9 gears? That just sounds fussy as hell.
Well, so if you've driven, so the new BMWs have basically this transmission in it, and they have 8 speeds, and it is the hands down best transmission auto I've ever driven.
It would depend on the implementation. And I say that because I'm driving the 5-speed, 24-year-old falling apart BMW that is absolutely thrilled to drive every single day, because it's so, you have to think about it. There's so much work involved as a driver. And it's okay, so that's great. It's 9 speeds, it's efficient, it slips through the gears. I would appreciate that if I'm on the track and I don't have to think about it and I'll have to pay attention to is my line and how I can go, that 10th degree faster. So from that perspective, maybe. Mm-hmm. But on a day-to-day driver, I'm interested in the 53 where I'm having a good time, because I live in Chicago and there are no interesting roads. I mean, there's four maybe. Everything else is
So you want the...
As I think about it, I don't care how great the automatic is. I'll take the stick if it's there.
Yeah, I typically will agree with you. I think, you know, if I was ordering an auto, it would be as... I mean, maybe I'd have it as a commuter car.
My minivan's an automatic.
Right. But I mean, at the same time, like, even then, I'd feel a little weird about it. I mean, I drive in and out of Chicago every single day, and I do not drive an automatic. So, I've never once thought, man, I just wish this was an automatic. It just, whatever. Like, it doesn't tire me. Like, I mean, it's not like it's the worst thing in the world. It's engagement.
Me neither. And, you know, I had a Clubman S loaner car for about a week a couple of years ago, and it had the automatic in it with the, not the real paddle shifters, but with the two-way paddle shifters on it. The push-pull. Yeah, and I ran it around in sport manual and was shifting gears off of the wheel, and really kind of, I mean, it's still not a great transmission, but like kind of the overall experience of that, I did kind of grow to like it. I was still picking my gears, but it was, you know, a lot less trouble. It only required one hand to do it. And I think there's a certain appeal there. But again, it you know, that was for running back and forth to Target and for, you know, just doing errands and whatnot. It was not outdoing any more sort of spirited driving. So yeah, I think that it would really... You know, as was already said, would depend on the implementation. But, you know, just no more than I drive these days, I kind of want to have as much fun as I can when I actually get in the car.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, my take, I mean, agreed. You know, 9-speed, awesome, amazing. The people who order automatics will be thrilled. You know, I just cringe at the thought that the manual transmission may only be around for another 10 years.
Yeah.
That's what, to me, I look at that, and that's what that means to me.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, so we shall see. Anything else? Anything else to touch on that we missed in this Red Riff Radio?
I don't think so. We were back pretty well to
back to where we left off. Speaking of the Countryman, our Motor Infall Countryman will be going away in about a month, roughly, and it will be replaced by a terrible car that nobody wants to drive and everybody's very upset about. Oh, wait a second. Sorry. Totally the opposite. We're going to be getting a JCW Roadster to replace our Countryman, and I think all three of us will at some point get to experience that car, and of course we'll be writing about it on the site quite a bit, but in the meantime, look for a couple other pieces on that venerable R60 Countryman, which apparently Matt does not like.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan.
I do, and despite the clutch, and I think Nathaniel, you've had mixed... Yeah, pretty good results.
No, right? I am a fan of the Countryman and have been since the first drive, especially like it as a snowmobile.
Yes, yeah, no, it's just ironic. All wheel drive, snow tires, and was it 2-3 days of snow this year?
Yeah,
something like that
in Chicago, no less. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
Well, what I understand is that we received our average of snow. It just stuck around for about like a day. We get snow and it would melt.
No, what are you gonna do? So yeah, so that is the show. So I'm sure we will be back. Actually, the next time you may hear from us will be when Todd and I are in France at Mini United, where we're going to be seeing, and this is a big deal, the new Jonker Works GP. So really quick, last question for you guys. What do you think it will have in terms of horsepower? And this, and we should put money on this, by the way. Or by money, I mean beer or something like that.
I'm going to say 230.
Really? Bold statement.
What is the current JCW output?
This is the difference. Is it HP or BHP? BHP... I believe it is 218.
Yeah, which is why I was guessing 230. It's just it'll. I think they'll give it a little bump. A little 10 horsepower bump.
I think it will get a bump. I don't know if it'll be 230. I know what didn't. Isn't it common knowledge? The some friends over at BMW had something to do with this one. The current JCW. Yes. Did they get to work on this one too? Perhaps.
Yeah, the GP. Yeah, no. This has definitely been. It's made the rounds a little bit.
Definitely. I'll say I will see the 230.
230. You guys are both going to agree on 230.
Well, okay. We'll split the
winnings. Let's go. Price is Right. 231.
So yeah, because I was going to say. So what if you go over though, you're disqualified. So based on that, because you guys are going to go over, I'm going to come in at 224. I don't think it's going to be as dramatic as you guys.
I thought you were going to go one horsepower there.
Yeah,
well, one horsepower.
Yeah, that's true. I'll do 225 horsepowers, and the only reason is so I can use the term horsepowers,
plural.
So we shall see. It's going to be about a week away. Check back and be ready for a bit of a surprise. We'll see.
Get ready for some ugly wheels.
Oh, God. Let's not even talk about that. Those are nasty. On that note, we've just spent 51 minutes talking about a bunch of random stuff. Oh, and there was no introduction to this show, by the way. It was just the dial-in and hello. So for those who have no idea what you're listening to, this is White Roof Radio slash the generic Neanderthal podcast. And this is a little bit of an odd treat, but we'll be back with your normal programming in a couple weeks with Todd, DB, and Chad. So until then, this is Gabe. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye. Way to land the plane.